on the world stage have also been on the loss as to whether to congratulate the president-elect Joe Biden or not. In this edition of the debate, we will look at Joe Biden's foreign policy directives and scrutinize how world leaders have reacted to his election and whether, based on this reaction, there will be inroads against Trump's previous decisions. First, let's cross on over to Miami. Our correspondent Ronnie Curbelo joins us to get an update on America and Americans. Ronnie Curbelo, Miami is, or Florida is the place that Trump won. What type of mood is there prevailing there right now? And how do people, what do people think about Trump's moves to press forward with pressing his election fraud claims and trying to get something out of that?
Well, in Florida, nobody talks about elections anymore. It's part of the past. I can't say that it's a topic, at least it's a top topic of discussion in the state of Florida. Now, the Floridians are spectators, waiting for what happens. Of course, that a lot can happen and nothing can happen at the same time. Because, as you know, as you just said, that Donald Trump is not accepting what the media has said, that he lost the election and the president-elect is Biden. Despite many, many, I have a big list here of senators, governors, former governors, even former presidents from the Republican Party congratulating in accepting the victory of Biden. But nothing can happen, actually. I would say that Trump, he has until January 20 in order to accept leaving the House, the White House. Because, as you know, by December 11 is when the county needs to stop. December 14 is when the delegates, the electoral delegates, needs to cast the vote. And then on January 6th, on a mixed session between Senate and the Congress, the lower house, need to count the votes and declare the winner. After that is when it's officially Biden or not, as right now Biden, will be elected, the elected president. So far, only the media with the tradition is nothing new. It's something that we are used to that the media is the one who declares the president when they find out that there is no way that the other candidate can surpass the numbers of electoral votes. And then on the noon, 12 o'clock noon on January 20, is the time where Donald Trump must have to leave the House, the White House. And then after that, if he insists to continue the White House, then comes other measures that we don't know that because never happened. So it'll be the first time if something so weird happened in this in the United States.
Indeed. Thank you very much for that. Ronnie Curbelo there talking to us, a correspondent from Miami. Let me introduce Senior Analyst Foreign Policy and Focus, Ian Williams, who joins us from New York. Ian Williams, welcome. So you're there in New York, and we're looking at somewhat of uncharted territory here. There should be an acknowledgement of the U.S. president-elect, but yet you're not getting that in the way that it should from the opposing party, and that would be the Republicans. What are your views, first of all, as to how this has gone down and transpired?
I don't think it's over till the fat golfer sings. I really don't. I think he is a person of infinite resource and cunning and tenacity, and he will try to hang on under all circumstances. The thing now is he's on his own. He was always a one-man band. He was a unique character in that sense. And most of his allies are changing their minds. They are realizing that how bad it will make them look. The rest of the world, the allies, are beginning to accept and acknowledge Biden, and they're really not going to go in the face of it, because it was a marginal thing, but Biden was clearly ahead in the popular vote, in the vote on the day, and all of the various counts. Not all of Trump's bluster couldn't alter that, and he concentrated on sort of denying and denigrating the incoming postal votes, which didn't make him look too good because he votes by post as well. But they wouldn't have made the difference in the end. So I think that was what turned it. If they thought there was a chance, they were joining him in frustrating the election and causing chaos. I don't think they think there's a chance, so they're not going to do it. But it's interesting to see the tone. I'm getting 4 emails an hour almost since Saturday, inviting me to contribute towards the fight back, the defend democracy, the defend our votes campaign from the Trump camp. And it's interesting, until Friday night, they were basically enumerating why they wanted you to and what they were accusing the Democrats of. But since Saturday morning, they haven't said what it is they're defending. They haven't said what it is they're accusing the Democrats of doing. They're saying radical leftist Democrats are trying to steal the election. They don't say how, they don't say what, but they're asking for money. And if you burrow down onto the donations, it says 50% of that money will go towards retiring Trump's campaign debt, and the rest will go. They haven't got the lawyers lined up, and so they can't even spend the 50%. I mean, Giuliani is cheap and comes cheap. They don't have to raise a lot of money to get Giuliani. He does it for free because he gets a free song out of being abused, I think. But the other lawyers they get they know that Trump bilks people. They know that Trump will not pay them as he inevitably loses. Uh-huh. So they're not stepping up. And the campaign debt is a very serious issue for them. He is coming out here, and as far as we know, he has huge business debts. He has huge personal debts. His empire of cards is about to fall down. He owes a lot of money on the campaign, where he spent a lot of money and didn't raise that much. So he's in trouble. And I think maybe his sane half is talking to the other half, and the sane half is saying, let's make all this fuss and raise money, and we can pay off some of the campaign debt. But the other half is genuine. He doesn't really accept that he can lose. All How right. do you explain somebody going to play golf 2 mornings after the loss of an election? Doesn't go to his own press conference. He goes off and plays golf. This either sends a signal of complete disdain to the electorate or a complete disconnect from reality. He really says, well, doesn't worry me. I haven't lost the election. I'm going to go ahead and play golf. So, yours. Is it signaling? It's difficult to tell. This man is completely unpredictable. And, you know, the normal political analyses don't really stand, because we're talking about a very erratic, mentally unstable yes. person.
Now, this is the part that gets kind of tricky and somewhat consequential and somewhat dangerous, based on many who have said that, first of all, there have been threats by Trump supporters in terms of the backlash, that they're going to do this or that, and it's going to involve violence. At the same time, we're looking at a very polarized, obviously, America, and Americans from both sides of the aisle here are not too keen on each other. And this is where it comes into the dangerous territory. At least it seems that way. Is there a chance that this is going to lead down that path where you have Trump supporters and Biden supporters perhaps clashing, where there have been some instances of that happening already?
I was very worried about this on Friday and Saturday. I think the moment has passed. If he can't raise the, you know, if he can't get the peasants out there with their pitchforks and torches on the Saturday and Sunday when this all happened, I don't think he's going to do it today. And the lackluster press conference that state managed by Giuliani is not going to inspire anybody.
Okay.
Devoted supporters must be scratching their heads and saying, okay, well, they've stolen it fair and square now, and there's not much we can do about it. But right. I still have that saving reservation. This man is totally erratic, and there's no telling what he might do. And some of his supporters are clearly dingbat crazy, and there's no telling what they will do if they're odd.
All right, great. Let me bring in Scott Bennett. Scott Bennett is joining us from San Francisco, political analyst. Scott Bennett, welcome. Let's move on now. We're going to find out, obviously, what Trump is going to be up to soon. Move on to some foreign policy initiatives that perhaps can come into play. When we take a look at Iran has come out and said, obviously, there's no possibility on renegotiating the Iran nuclear deal, but Biden and his team have said, based on some news sources, that they are going to seek to re-enter the Iran nuclear deal within months, which sounds pretty quick. How do you see it?
Well, I think, first of all, Joe Biden has been supported by Bibi Netanyahu now, and Bibi Netanyahu has recognized Biden and Harris as somehow being president and vice president before all of the legal battles and the election votes are counted. I've always prescribed and thought Donald Trump is trying to make a right turn out of the problems that he's fallen into because of poor advisors with regards to Iran. And I don't think he has any intention of engaging in conflict with Iran. And I think it's only a matter of time before he does not make a new deal, not engage in any pressure campaign, but probably will dust off the old Iran deal and enter in a new one. So I don't have any feelings that he's going to be going into a direction of conflict, nor do any of the people that work in the intelligence circles that I've talked with. I would say, however, that, you know, the comments by your other guests calling people dingbat crazy because they don't support a what seems to be increasingly fraudulent, manipulated, ballot harvested election where all of the legal evidence and the witness testimony and the whistleblowers who have been working in these agencies will testify to, and these will be federal crimes that most likely will be prosecuted. I think it's the epitome of arrogance, which typically comes out of the deep state sort of illuminated class of political consultants and academics who've never served in government or been in the military. That's quintessentially characteristic for what this gentleman is trying to say, and I use that term advisedly. I think this is going to be a potential civil war, but not started by the right, not started by Donald Trump supporters, but started by the fanatical lunatic left that have been burning down cities and engaging in some of the worst examples of domestic terrorism ever seen. So it's not the right, it's not Donald Trump supporters, it's the left that carry madness, and the reason they're trying to push Biden in now is to inflate the bubble of their madness so that they can pop it and in that explosion try and launch a civil war in America where Americans will have to defend against dingbat left.
I knew when we got into this debate we couldn't escape this topic at hand, but I got to give obviously Ian Williams a chance to answer back there. Go ahead, Ian Williams.
I can't repeat myself on this program. You have heard me week after week denouncing Joe Biden. You've heard me week after week talking about what scurrilous people the Clintons are. I'm an equal opportunities finger pointer. And when I say dingbats, I say people who turn up armed to the teeth at town halls trying to intimidate voters and officials are dingbat crazy. And I don't care whether they have Trump on their hats or Biden on their hats. It's just I haven't seen many people carrying semi-automatic weapons with Biden stickers on. They've all been Trump supporters. I'm not even saying all Trump supporters are dingbat crazy. I'm saying that a very significant and dangerous proportion of them have been demonstrably crazy.
Who burned down the city?
They turn up on the street waving guns. In fact, a lot of the burning, as we have seen, if you look at the newspapers, if you read the indictments, was far-right people trying to sow problems. But let's get back to the foreign policy. Biden's foreign policy is not that much different from Trump's overall. He supports Israel. The problem is that he supports the loonies in Israel. He supports the Sheldon Adelson and the far-right Likud, the millennialists and the Apocalypse Now people. He wants, as a lot of, let's say, sensible right-wing Zionists do, is a two-state solution, which he knows the Trump deal will negate and make impossible. They also want the Iran nuclear deal because it takes Iran nuclear weapons off the table. That's what sensible Israelis want. That's what Biden wants. And it so happens to coincide with what Iran is saying and what Iran wants and what the rest of the world wants. So here we have a clear distinction between the crazies who have been going along with Trump and foreign policy field
and the same
rational, connected to reality people, the rest of the world, every other country in the world, and a lot of the significant proportion of the Israeli political class want the Iranian nuclear deal to be reinstated. And the question is, can Biden just take a tip from Trump? I hope he can.
Okay.
And just issue executive decrees reversing what Trump has been doing.
All right, Scott Bennett, so you can have half your question a rebuttal to what Ian Williams there said, and the other half will move to, if you don't mind, I'm going to forge it into one question, about China, who has declined to formally recognize Biden, along with Russia, I must say, in terms of the win, and tell us what you think Russia and China, how Biden will be dealing with it. Go ahead.
Well, I think China is certainly happy and clapping their hands together in quiet silence, but they have to put up a good front for their token agent who received millions of dollars and their pornography-addicted son who was that agent. So China is really the sleeping giant that is happiest with Joe Biden because he's their puppet. He's their man. There's also been examples of all sorts of new charges and investigations into that. Russia, I think, is really a more of an astute statesman sort of country. So I think they're doing what should be done. And Netanyahu is a traitor, and he's just simply pissed off at Trump because Trump refused to bomb Iran. And that's why Netanyahu is now moving against Trump. But ultimately, it's going to come down to the analysis of the evidence and the facts and the ballots and the supercomputer hammer that naval intelligence people have been telling me have been used for multiple operations overseas, but now we've seen them multiply operated here against the United States domestic elections. So yes, in one sense, it's very ironic that what we've done to other countries has been done to us. Michigan and Wisconsin were winning for Trump, and then suddenly the votes were turned off, the machines were turned off, and then at 4 a.m., 4 hours later, he was hundreds of thousands of votes ahead of Trump. That's impossible. The statistical impossibility of this vote points to the very real probability of a civil war if the left try and do a coup d'etat. So this is why Americans are very, very upset. And ironically, it gives a chance for Iran and other nations that have legitimate grievances against the United States and have legitimate angers against the assassination of General Soleimani and people like that. Iran has been fighting on the right side by defending civilized free people from ISIS and the Wahhabi lunatics. By the way, the Antifa Black Lives Matter manuals on how to sow social chaos and destruction are written in Arabic, not Persian, Arabic, Wahhabi language. That tells you a lot of what the domestic terrorists are. They're not Iranians. They're from the Arabic description. That's why they're written in that language.
Okay.
So I think we're seeing the real issues, and I do have confidence that the legal statutes and systems of the United States are going to prevail, and you are going to see evidence coming out in the next coming weeks which will indicate Donald Trump won the election and it was tried to be fraudulently stolen, at which case the left will go into panic and fury mode, and they'll claim what Rumpelstiltskin, the agent provocateur of the deep state on the other side of the camera, is saying, and that is, oh, the right is stealing this election. No, right. The left tried to steal it, they got caught, they got shut down, and now they're going to be imprisoned, and that's why they're running.
Well, you talked about Saudi Arabia, I'm assuming as one of those Arab countries.
Your companion there. For months before the election, the pundits, the academics, the politicians, all said.
I don't want to hear your propaganda. I want to hear a question from the host. Not from you, not your show, the host. So be quiet. Go ahead, sir.
Try to sabotage the U.S. Postal Service.
Ian Williams, for the sake of.
He appointed a saboteur in charge of the post office.
Be quiet, Englishman. Go ahead.
Right up to the end, they were sabotaging the machine, the postal service.
Let's move on. I got 2 minutes left.
Specifically, to stop postal vote getting in because he knew it would come against
this
him. So he
constantly
shouting statistical impossibility after they start.
All right, we're talking over each other. Let me address this question, Ian Williams, because we're running out of time. Talked about Arabs there, our guest, Scott Bennett. I have to talk about Saudi Arabia. If Iran and the U.S. were to, again, big if, to go back into this JCPOA, how do you think Saudi Arabia would react to this? Because obviously, based on the previous count of how the JCPOA went down, they weren't too happy.
I think America is done with Saudi.
This will be for Ian Williams. I'm sorry, Scott Bennett. Go ahead, Ian Williams. Go ahead.
The Saudis will be very upset by it. They'll be very upset that Trump has gone. Even possible the Democrats might say to them, excuse me, you can't go around dismembering journalists and putting them through meat grinders. It's an outside possibility. I do believe it really depends to be how. It's difficult to see how it's going to shake down. Because in the end, some combination of Israeli how should we say, centrist opinion, and the Saudis will work on Biden. I do believe he is committed. Obama was committed because it was his trademark deal to the JCPOA. So I think that is going to go in. And the Saudis will either decide that they have to accommodate with it, because in the end, they've got money, they've got big checks, but they don't have the military. They don't have the diplomatic force that the United States has allowed them to get away with things like this for a while. So I really think that the Biden people will show no compunction at all. The Democrats in general at that level have shown no compunction in going along with bloodthirsty dictators
okay.
when it suits political ends. And this is no exception. They'll go along with the Saudis.
Final question to you, Scott Bennett. Won't be a question, just your views in less than a minute. Go ahead.
Well, I think Biden is a puppet and really a dead man walking who doesn't have any of the mental clarity required of a president. And there's even been cases where his right earlobe in previous pictures is different than the one that appeared at the debate, which many in the Navy intel circles are saying there's an imposter, there's a body double. Why? Because he's mentally gone and he's easy to be replaced. If he did get in, and I don't think he would, I think it would be a civil war, but if he did, for the sake of argument, they would immediately replace him with Kamala Harris and probably try and appoint Gavin Newsom as vice president and go down a road of socialism, Green New Deal, authoritarianism, mandatory mask wearing, confiscation of guns, and all of that would lead America into a 1776 type revolution. I don't think
Fine.
That'll be the
we're
case.
We're going to have to leave it there. I'm sorry. Thank you very much for that. Ronnie Carvello spoke to us from Miami, political analyst, listening there to Scott Bennett, and senior analyst at Foreign Policy and Focus in Williams. Thank you. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. For Mikhail Vitakulis, goodbye. Until next time.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're going to be with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll discuss the 22nd chapter of the Holy Quran, Surah Al-Hajj, or Pilgrimage. Before moving on, let's just listen to some verses of this chapter, and we'll be back with you. Stay with us.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
وَلِكُلِّ أُمَّةٍ جَعَلْنَا مَنْسَكًا لِيَذْكُرُوا اسْمَ اللَّهِ عَلَى ما إله واحد فله أسلموا وبشر المخبتين.
And for all religion we have appointed a rite of sacrifice, that they may mention the name of Allah over what He has provided for them of sacrificial animals. For your God is one God, so to Him submit. And O Muhammad, give good tidings to the humble before their Lord.
So the 34th verse of this very chapter was talking about mansik, was talking about a specific ritual of the previous nations and people. وَلِكُلِّ أُمَّةٍ جَعَلَّ مَنْسَكًا لِيَذْكُرُ اسْمَ اللَّهِ عَلَى مَا رَزَقَهُمْ مِنْ بَهِيمَةِ الْأَنْعَامِ. For every people we have appointed a ritual that they may mention the name of Allah and what He has provided them of the cattle quadrupeds. فَإِلَهُكُمْ إِلَهٌ وَاحِدٌ. So your God is one God. فَلَهُ أَسْلِمُوا وَبَشِّرِ الْمُخْبِتِينَ. Therefore surrender unto Him and give you glad tidings unto the humble. So the beginning part of the verse was here to answer a very important question. Does Allah need sacrifice? This program, has this program actually existed in other religions and other nations too? And what kind of a nation needs to actually slaughter and offer animals as sacrifice for Allah? What kind of an Allah needs being attracted by this mean? But the Holy Quran says, وَلِكُلِّ أُمَّةٍ جَعَلَّ مَنْسَكَ. For every people we have appointed a ritual, and the reason is that they may mention the name of Allah. لِيَذْكُرُ اسْمَ اللَّهِ. So the program of sacrificing has been existed throughout all the nations, all the religions related to the Almighty Allah. And the only way we can get closer to the Almighty Allah is to get the orders of Him through these divine religions. The verse says, وَلِكُلِّ أُمَّةٍ جَعَلْنَا مَنْسَكَ. So this mansak, this ritual, although it might be a bit different between the different nations, but it has existed, and we can get closer to the Almighty Allah through these programs. Of course, the verse says, لِيَذْكُرُ اسْمَ اللَّهِ عَلَى مَا رَزَقَهُ. So we would infer from this part of the verse that whenever the sacrifice wants to be done, it needs the name of the Almighty Allah to be mentioned. And it is so important that if the name of the Almighty Allah is not mentioned before the sacrificing is done, eating and taking benefit from that meat is not permissible.
على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this
series
of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
approach. We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
أنتم الفقراء.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
And it is really interesting that those religions related to the Almighty Allah, the real religions, provide both this world and hereafter. Since the very verse says, وَلِكُلِّ أُمَّةٍ جَعَلْنَا مَنْسَكَ, and it says, رَزَقَهُمْ مِنْ بَهِيمَةِ الْأَنْعَامِ, we have appointed a ritual, and the same time the ritual is being sent down, with it, simultaneously, we provide you with cattle quadrupeds. We provide your sustenance. So the real and true religion provides both of these things altogether. The real religion does not neglect the sustenance of the people. But the only sustenance allowed in this religion is the sustenance through which the name of Allah, the station of the Almighty Allah's mercy, is being reached. In fact, even the food of the people who are monotheists must actually remind them of the Almighty Allah. And at the end of the verse it says, وَبَشِّرِ الْمُخْبِتِينَ, and give glad tidings unto the humble, means being humble before the orders of religious thoughts and beliefs equals getting glad tidings. And indeed this sentence means that, O Messenger of Allah, you should give the glad tidings of happiness, prosperity, safety of chastisement, as well as the wholesome life to those who have become humble and obedient to the commands of the Almighty Allah. Raghib, in his book Mufradat, says, the Arabic word nusk means worship, and nasik means the one who is worshipping, and manasikul hajj means the places wherein the worship is done. But based on some different books like Majma'ul Bayan by Tabarsi, the Arabic term mansak probably means offering sacrifice in particular among all different worships. So the term mansak has a general concept which encompasses other worships, including especially rites of Hajj. But in this verse, which is under discussion, with the context of the Quranic phrase لِيَذْكُرُوا اسْمَ اللَّهِ, that they mention the name of Allah, it means special to sacrifice. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program as well. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Things always worked for me, and that's when faith begins.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
فيلم فيخ از علوم شریفه اسلامی Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Jafar Sobhani. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. والصلاة والسلام على خير خلقه وآله الطاهرين.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, praise be to Allah, the Lord of the worlds, and may His peace and blessings be upon the best of His creation, Prophet Muhammad, and His pure progeny. One of the causes of success is focus or total attentiveness. As a consequence of centering thoughts on a single point, the mind remains attached to it. Then, even the hardest hurdle cannot weaken the man's concentration. Focus is for work, while a lever is for lifting weights. The principle of a lever is that force concentrates at one point, which makes it easy to lift up heavy objects. Similarly, by concentrating the mental powers on a single point, one is able to solve complex problems. The working of our mind and body is like that of raindrops. When collected at one place, they make a vast ocean. But if they fall here and there in a scattered manner, they disappear in the dust without any visible effect. We all must have heard about the great personality of Sheikh Bahá'í. He had mastery over many sciences like physics, mathematics, and Islamics, and has left a number of his precious books for the posterity. He says, "I have debated with many scientists and scholars. Though their knowledge was very wide in every field, I used to win the debate. However, when I came across a person who was a specialist in his field, he vanquished me easily. It was so because my knowledge was insufficient in that particular subject." Mental abilities resemble sun rays in the matter of solving problems. If sun rays are made to concentrate on a certain point with the help of a magnifying glass, they burn down whatever it kept there, though the scattered rays do not affect anything. In the same way, unless the rays of human thoughts focus on a point, they cannot remove hurdles, as different aspects are not illuminated. Veteran teachers always instruct their students to study everything deeply, which only means that the thoughts must concentrate on a particular subject. All inventions and discoveries are the result of concentrated effort. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Jafar Sobhani. To find out more about this program, log on to our website parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Around the World with Reporters.
The head of the UK Armed Forces has warned if current smaller conflicts escalate out of control, drawing in more countries and weapons, World War III might break out. In a Remembrance Day interview with Sky News, General Sir Nick Carter said the world is currently, quote, a very uncertain and anxious place.
We have to remember history might not repeat itself, but it has a rhythm. And if you look back at the last century, before both world wars, I think it was unarguable that there was escalation that led to the miscalculation, which ultimately led to war at a scale we would hopefully never see again.
General Carter says that the British Army will comprise 90,000 human soldiers and 30,000 robots by the 2030s. And aside from modernizing and amplifying its own military, the UK is still the world's second largest arms exporter.
Military arms deals worth an estimated £39 billion were approved between 2008 and 2017, a third of which went to countries with abysmal human rights records.
But we have not seen any evidence of that. If we stop selling them the bombs, if we stop selling them the planes, that will have an impact on Saudi and on what Saudi can do in Yemen, because we are one of the main exporters of arms to Saudi Arabia, and frankly, we can't make bombs fast enough for them.
The UK currently has £11 billion worth of orders. So how does stockpiling and exporting arms factor into the UK's World War III game plan?
The UK government has spent hundreds of billions of pounds, large amounts of which have yet to be properly even accounted for, in response to the coronavirus crisis. And General Carter knows full well, I suspect, as do many others in government, that at some point a reckoning for this is going to come, and this money is going to have to be found somewhere, either through tax rises or more likely through departmental budget cuts. And that time is fast approaching, when indeed the British government, as indeed other governments, are going to have to start doing the mathematical reckoning for their spending. And so I think possibly what's the motive here for General Carter as head of the UK Armed Forces to remind yet again for the message that is constantly being put out by the think tanks and the media that support strong armed forces, that is that the world is a dangerous place.
The world is still reeling from the results of the presidential elections in the US, undisputedly the world's military heavyweight. And although Donald Trump's four-year term was the first without a new war since Eisenhower, his administration has allowed military voices to shout down those of experienced civil servants in the development of foreign policy. Funding cuts to non-defense federal agencies and many career civil servants resigning means policy planning is being entrusted invariably to those in uniform. Bianca Rahimi, London.
The United States has not been so divided in recent memory as there are two people claiming to be president. The mainstream media rushed to accept Joe Biden's declaration of victory, even though he has an average lead of only 32,000 votes in three states in a vote which is not even finished counting yet. Donald Trump has also claimed victory prematurely. It appears half the country believes Biden is the president-elect, while the other half believes Trump is the president-elect. No one knows what will happen next, and many fear tensions could elevate into violence.
Joe Biden has won. Trump may contest it, but the evidence is there. There is no illegal things regarding vote. The system has worked, and it will continue. One man will not ruin this system for us. Joe Biden is now our president.
And one thing I want to add, it's not Republican versus Democrat. It's we are Americans.
American special of our country.
Period.
But mail-in ballots were used in unprecedentedly massive numbers, and the vote's legality has been openly disputed for many months. It seems certain the courts will ultimately decide the legality of the vote, and maybe even who won, as in the year 2000, which caused massive political alienation, cultural division, and mistrust. The lack of trust is also because the U.S. election process is considered the worst of any of the core Western democracies. That's according to the Harvard-based Electoral Integrity Project, whose 2019 index ranked U.S. elections just 57th in the world. Pro-Biden corporate media is seemingly acting as if there is no dispute at all, while skeptical pro-Trump outlets insist this unique election must be vetted by the courts and that Trump must not concede before that process is finished.
I think he'll just give it up eventually. People will stop giving him airtime, stop giving him attention, and he'll just give up. He'll figure out another way to be in the news and all over the place.
Both sides appear to be bewildered by the stance of the other side, and both sides are certain of their own righteousness. With two presidents, many say the U.S. election could not have turned out worse, and the worst seems yet to come. Rami Mazahari, Chicago.
Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas has congratulated U.S. President-elect Joe Biden. In a statement, Abbas said he looks forward to working with the president-elect and his administration. Palestinian officials have expressed their satisfaction with the departure of outgoing President Donald Trump and said for them nothing was worse than Trump's era.
We welcome the results of the American elections. Like many world states, we agreed that Trump's era was a nightmare. As President Abbas said, we are looking forward to achieve freedom, independence, justice, and dignity for our people. All previous U.S. administrations had specific commitments towards Israel, but this time we hope we can cooperate with the new administration.
Several Palestinian political groups have also expressed their satisfaction with, in the first place, the departure of President Donald Trump. The man who took several anti-Palestinian measures, including recognition of Jerusalem al-Quds as Israel's capital in late 2017, moving the U.S. embassy there, and declaring the so-called deal of the century. This had led the Palestinian Authority to halt its political dealings with Trump's administration.
We don't expect to witness a great difference between U.S. administrations and the Israeli regime. But Trump tarnished U.S. image and harmed its interests in the region. I hope Biden can make the U.S. committed to international law. Biden and Trump differ in everything, in performance and reasoning.
Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who was among Trump's close allies around the world, waited 12 hours to congratulate Biden. But at the same time, he thanked Trump for taking U.S.-Israel ties to an unprecedented level. For Palestinians, a change of administration in the U.S. is not a promise of change in Washington's policy toward them. However, Palestinians do hope for a gain in Donald Trump's departure, as his term in office is considered the worst even among most hostile U.S. presidents. Mona Khandil, occupied Ramallah.
Coronavirus cases among the general population are rapidly increasing in the Gaza Strip as over 200 infections are being discovered daily. The first community spread of the deadly virus was detected in late August, and over 8,000 cases have been discovered so far. Health officials have sounded the alarm over the rising figures in the densely populated enclave.
The number of infections in the Gaza Strip is high, and we are extremely worried due to the rising number. We are doing our best to deal with the situation. We are working around the clock to detect infections.
The coronavirus has complicated the already dire humanitarian situation in the blockaded Gaza Strip. COVID-19 has threatened the socioeconomic welfare of nearly 2 million Palestinians living in Gaza as much as their health.
People here don't have access to preventive equipment because they are crash-strapped. They can hardly provide food for their families.
الحصار الإسرائيلي و...
People have been suffering from the Israeli blockade, and now the situation has only gotten worse because of the coronavirus pandemic.
The Israeli blockade in place since 2007 has had a devastating impact on the well-being of people in the tiny coastal sliver. Gaza's health sector is suffering from acute shortage in medicines and hospital supplies.
14 years of the inhumane Israeli blockade on the Gaza Strip have taken their toll on the humanitarian, health and economic situation. The Israeli blockade has left the health system in Gaza in ruin, making it unable to deal with the coronavirus pandemic.
The coronavirus is fast spreading in the Gaza Strip, and people fear the worst because of the high population density.
As infections continue to rise, rights groups are calling for the complete lifting of the Israeli blockade to help fight the spread of the deadly coronavirus. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
On Friday, taxi drivers went on a one-day strike nationwide, calling the government's attention to the economic plight they're facing following the pandemic crisis and the connected restrictions. Unions also called two protests held in front of the economy and transport ministries, attended by thousands of taxi drivers from across the country. Drivers are demanding more support from the government as, quote, they don't have the money to pay the monthly costs of the vehicles, nor to provide for their families.
Gli aiuti ricevuti sono assolutamente insufficienti.
The subsidies we have received from the government so far are totally inadequate. 275 euros each month is not sufficient. How are we supposed to put food on the table for our families? Consider we have suffered losses in the range of 80 to 90%.
Intorno ai 3.600 euro.
Io ho ricevuto.
My income has dropped by 80%, but all expenses have remained unvaried. Insurance fees, fuel and car disinfection costs have not been reduced. Furthermore, the government is doing nothing to stop illegal cabs from going around.
È molto alta.
A new three-tier restriction system came into force on Friday. As a result, four Italian regions, namely Calabria, Lombardy, Piedmont and Val d'Aosta, have been placed in soft lockdowns. The government has also imposed a nationwide curfew from 10 p.m. until 5 a.m., requiring all museums and galleries to shut down and all shopping centers to close on weekends.
Protests against the new anti-COVID restrictions imposed by the government have been staged in a number of cities across Italy. Some demonstrations turned violent as protesters vented their frustration and anger over how the pandemic crisis has been handled.
The virus is a moving train. Today it is necessary to slow it down, otherwise the train will knock us down. We are hopeful that these measures will be limited to several weeks.
The new restrictions imposed by the Italian government apply for about 4 weeks, until December 3. Max Civili, Rome.
On the 14th of March 2011, Bahraini security forces began a violent crackdown on protests demanding greater political participation, free and fair elections, and an end to corruption and equality for the country's suppressed Shia majority. It has now been revealed that the UK's top military officer, General Sir David Richards, was in Manama holding meetings with the country's senior military officials and the Crown Prince 5 days earlier. In the brutal crackdown, Bahrain security forces were backed by 1,000 UK-trained and equipped Saudi troops. Since then, almost all prominent human rights defenders and dissidents have been jailed, silenced, or forced into permanent exile. The main opposition party, Al-Wefaq, has been dissolved, and the country's only independent newspaper, Al-Wasat, forcibly closed down. Torture is widespread in Bahrain's prisons, especially for the purpose of extracting confessions that are used to sentence people to death. And the country has the largest number of political prisoners in relation to population.
We have interviewed people, men, women and children, who have been tortured by the regime. Children who have been snatched from the streets by armed gangs and have been then beaten and driven around the streets. One boy had his teeth knocked in, and they are forced then to inform on family members or friends or people that they know in the villages who have attended democratic protests or have attended political gatherings. Inside the prisons, people have been waterboarded. They've been beaten with truncheons on their bare bodies and on their feet. They've been hung for hours, days, and deprived of sleep. They have been anally raped with truncheons. They have been just the cruelest, most inhumane treatment.
Nonetheless, the British government continues to support the regime. When construction began on a new permanent naval base in Bahrain in 2015, then UK Foreign Secretary Philip Hammond said this.
This will give us the flexibility to respond to any emerging challenge in the Gulf, whether it's from a state actor or a non-state actor, whether it's from within the Gulf or outside the Gulf. This enhances our range. It gives Britain a permanent naval base east of Suez for the first time since 1967.
Strategic interests seem to be Westminster's priority. According to Human Rights Watch, arbitrary arrests, torture, executions and forced disappearances continue with very little interference from so-called democracies. Bianca Rahimi, London.
With the name of martyr Qasim Soleimani decorating the Persian language department at the University of Sana'a, the first graduates of the department walking down it, reviving the memory of Haj Qasim, who they carried his name as a title for their badge.
When we talked about the Persian language, it was impossible to learn it because of the international fight against it, and whoever spoke it was considered as the enemy of Islam. Today, however, we have proof to the world that we and the Iranian people are brothers, and Islam unites us.
Graduates expressed their overwhelming joy of this accomplishment, stressing that their choice name for the Soleimani badge comes at a critical time in light of American unilateralism reaching its peak.
Martyr Soleimani's efforts in the region and his support for the Palestinian cause requires us to revive his memory by naming a badge in his name.
The ceremony came after Hassan Erlu presented his credentials to the President of the Supreme Political Council, Mahdi al-Mashat, as Ambassador of the Islamic Republic of Iran to Yemen. This shows the depth of the Yemeni-Iranian relations, especially with the U.S. escalating its hostile policies towards the two countries and towards the resistance axis as a whole. Erlu's predecessor left Sana'a in September 2015, and in October last year, Iran's foreign ministry said the process of sending a new ambassador was hindered by attacks on the embassy.
While some Persian Gulf Arab states leaders rushed to normalize relations with the Zionist entity, Yemenis continued to reaffirm their support for the Palestinian cause. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
Vienna pays tribute to the victims of Monday's terror attack carried out by a sympathizer of the Daesh terrorist group.
It's a really tense situation, something we never had before in Vienna. So Vienna was always a really secure place, and we felt really safe and protected, and suddenly, well, out of nowhere, this comes. I'm living nearby, and hearing this was really shocking.
As the nation tries to come to grips with the terrifying shooting, news has emerged of serious mishaps in the run-up to the crime. Austria's interior minister confirmed the country did have intelligence that the gunman had traveled to Slovakia in search of ammunition in July. Apparently, a crucial tip was not followed up. Karl Nehammer admitted to official errors.
Something obviously went wrong in our communications. An independent commission of inquiry has been set up.
In Parliament, his predecessor from the right-wing FPÖ party called for the minister's resignation. Chancellor Sebastian Kurz has called for more decisive action at the EU level against what he termed political Islam. Earlier, he'd made it clear the attack should not be seen as a conflict between Christians and Muslims. Experts believe if the correct attributions are not made, it could trigger cultural wars in society.
If you define terrorism, it's the use of force against civilians in order to create fear for political purposes. So that's terrorism. That doesn't have, this definition doesn't have much to do with religion.